Welcome to Building Wealthy Habits, a Tricord Advisors radio program. You will recognize Randy from Retirement Unlimited, a program that has aired on our station for over 15 years. Each week on Building Wealthy Habits, your hosts discuss life's hard financial questions relating to retirement, business ownership, and losing a spouse. Randy Barkley, Jeremiah Lee, and Laura Lee are CFP-certified financial planners at Tricord Advisors, and Jeremiah is a California licensed attorney. If you have a topic you would like them to discuss on the air or would like to connect with them about your situation, visit their website, tricordadvisors.com, or give them a call at 951-684-7011. Now, let's join the conversation on Building Wealthy Habits.
Welcome to Building Wealthy Habits. We are talking today about tax advantage and tax planning and basically giving generously and how you do that in the most efficient way. We record each week. This is Laura Lee. I'm Jeremiah Lee. Randy Barkley isn't here this week, but we meet each week and we talk about topics that we find they're interesting to our clients, that are interesting, hopefully, to you guys, to help you make wise choices with your money.
Right. So planned giving, I'm really excited to talk about this because most of our clients have a part of them that has a philanthropic bent to them, or they're charitably minded. It could be a local organization. It could be an organization that they have benefited from. It could be, there's so many different charities around the country, and even in our local community. So we want to talk about it from a planning perspective, what the advantages are of giving, but we also want to talk about it in just terms of like the philosophical approach that a household can take on to giving and the impact that can have on future generations.
Yeah. So maybe we'll start a little bit. My favorite view of giving is not somebody asked me, and so I looked at my wallet and gave something. Mm-hmm. Often for folks who are doing well in life, who are financially successful, whatever they have in their wallet is not nearly enough in a sense of what they really want to be giving, what they feel would be good. So what I'm a huge advocate is for sitting down and being purposeful and saying, what do we really care about? Do we want to give? Making those choices at one point in the year. And then the rest of the year is kind of just executing on that, whether it's giving to a religious organization, a charity, whether you wait till the end of the year, however you do it. I really like being purposeful and intentional, thinking about it, deciding, hey, we want to give $10,000 and this is how we're going to do it, versus just waiting to be reactionary to it was Christmas time, someone asked for something, and so I gave to them.
And so most of our listeners probably know this, but just to be clear, there is a difference between, your cousin who asks you for some extra money so that he can do X, Y, or Z. That's a gift. But if it's an organization and it's there's a registration with the federal government, 501c3 is a lot of charitable organizations that we talk about, 501c6, there's different iterations of it. But what we're talking about today is donating to a federally recognized charitable organization. And that then allows some tax benefits. So let's talk about the tax benefits.
So you get, in essence, you get a tax write-off, so it reduces your income. And how much is taxed on. So if you made $100,000 during the year and you gave $10,000 to a charitable organization, in essence, you're treated for a lot of respects for when you calculate your taxes as if you only made $90,000. They kind of reduce that level. It's below the line, meaning it's below an AGI type calculation, but it's one of the deductions that you can take out of your taxes to reduce your taxable income. And for some people, that's a added bonus they would give anyway. Others, that's the whole reason they're giving, is to do some strategic tax planning.
Yes. And so this, let's talk about some of the strategies there, because there's a few that we want to touch on in today's podcast. So there are clients, or if you come across yourself a moment in time where you're expecting more income in a given year than maybe you've had in other years. So examples of this might be, a commission, a large commission that you expect to come in, a bonus, or for our business owners in the year that you're planning to sell your business. Mm-hmm. So you're looking ahead and you're expecting, it could still be within the same year, but you're expecting a much higher income than other years. And so this might be an opportunity for utilizing some of these strategies. Yeah. So let's talk about one of the first ones, donating appreciated stock.
That's one of my favorites. Most people have not heard about this, but it's such a useful mindset and the use of some of these accounts. So if you had stock, say, we'll just say Apple stock you bought 20 years ago, you paid a small amount for it, and then the stock has grown and grown and grown and grown, and now it's in an account that you still own. And if you were to sell that stock, all that growth, that's going to be taxed as capital gains. You're going to pay right. taxes on them.
Right.
And so we've had a number of folks who will come in and say, I have these stocks I bought a long time ago. They're taxable. And if I sell them, I'm going to have all these taxes. I don't know what to do with them. I don't want to sell them and pay the taxes. Well, if they're also charitably minded, there's something you can do is donating that. They call it appreciated stock. So if you were to donate that Apple, a share of mm-hmm. Apple stock, you'll get whatever the fair market value is of that day that you donate it. That's the write-off you get. And so if the stock is worth, you know, $150 a share, that's what you'll get when you donate it. But you may have paid $20 for it years ago.
Right.
And so that difference in taxes, the way this works functionally is that you donate the stock, the charity receives it. And when the charity sells it, the taxes become due for the charity. But because they're a charity, they don't pay taxes.
Right.
So those taxes just disappear. So I had a client who came in and they had an account. It was about $40,000 in an account that they'd had for a while. They'd invested in this years ago. And they didn't know what to do with it because there's so much built-in capital gains. And we realized they were charitable. We talked through this. So now instead of giving their tithe, their religious, instead mm-hmm. of giving their tithe out of their income, every month they give out of that account. And in doing that, they're able to slowly diminish that account, get the benefit of all these write-offs for the amount they're giving without having to pay those taxes.
Well, and I think you answered the question that I was going to ask, which is, do you have to give all of it at one time?
No, it's great. You don't. Yeah, I believe you have to give one whole share. It's mm-hmm. hard to give fractional shares. But when you give one share, you don't have to give the whole account. Mm-hmm. You can give bit by bit, year over year, whatever you'd like to do. Right. And the benefit is you're avoiding those taxes. You only paid a certain amount for it. The charity gets the full benefit, and so do you as the write-off.
That's fantastic. It's
a great. So anyone who has, it doesn't have to be a separate account either. It could just be your regular investments. If you have any stocks that are highly appreciated, and you're kind of worried about the taxes, you could consider just donating that stock. Mm-hmm. Most charities will have a brokerage account, and you make a transfer from your brokerage account to their brokerage account of however many shares you want to. And mm-hmm. that's how you trigger that donation.
So we're talking about, obviously, equities that have been purchased with after-tax dollars. You've recognized appreciated yeah. growth, and then you decide to give from that. Another strategy is when you might hold equities within a qualified account. And a qualified account would be considered tax deferred money for the purposes of retirement or otherwise. So I'm kind of going a little bit out of order here for our agenda, but let's talk about if you were to give from a qualified account.
Yeah, good question. So for most folks, you and I, in our 40s, if we were to give, we can't give from our 401k. It's the money
too
is
early.
In there.
Too
it's too early. It's too soon. Yeah. The money is in there. It's growing. It's just where it needs to be. But someone who has reached the age between 72 and 75 right now, but someone who is receiving what's called required minimum distributions. Every year, the IRS requires them to take out a certain amount from their retirement accounts and pay taxes on that. And then use those funds. Well, instead of doing a required minimum distribution, they can do a qualified charitable distribution. And so basically, instead of the money coming to themselves, they can redirect this money over to a specific charity. And so it's kind of like choosing that retirement account, that amount you have to take mm-hmm. out, just redirect it. And at the end of the day, the big benefit here is that it lowers your AGI. Mm-hmm. Usually when you receive money, your adjusted gross income for taxes, you receive income,
yeah.
it pushes up, and things like write-offs for medical expenses or other items that are all tied to your AGI number. If you were to include your required minimum distribution, it'll bump up that number and maybe limit some of those deductions. However, if you do a qualified charitable distribution, that's hard to say.
Yeah, go.
A qualified charitable distribution. If you were to do it that way, it skips right past your AGI and keeps that AGI lower. Mm-hmm. And so if you're already charitable minded, you're already setting that money out, it's a great way to do it before it hits your AGI so that AGI is lower and all those other deductions for medical or other items that are based on AGI, you have a better chance of receiving some benefit there.
So just to be clear, this does not apply to an inherited account. If you have inherited a qualified account from a deceased spouse or a family member, this wouldn't apply in that case scenario. The other point that I think is really important is that when you are planning to receive the distribution, you can receive it into your account and then directly earmark it for a charitable organization, or you can actually just send that distribution directly to the charitable organization. So that's a little detailed, but I think it's important to note that the point being that the distribution is sent directly to the charitable organization.
And to qualify, there's some rules, of course, to check with either your advisor or someone to make sure that you hit all the rules if you're trying to do a qualified charitable distribution, that you match up with the appropriate steps.
A great idea, especially if you're expecting RMDs and you're not dependent on the income that you're planning to receive in that year. So, well, let's talk about, we talked about donating appreciated stock. Let's talk about bunched giving. Mm. And this is a strategy that I think could apply for a lot of people, and maybe they don't know that it's something that they can do.
It exists, yeah. We talk about the basics of, most people know that when you do your taxes, you have just a standard deduction. And that standard deduction, I think it's for a married couple, it's in the $20,000, $23,000.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about a case scenario here, but in their case scenario, it was $24,000 was the standard deduction, married filing jointly.
And so if you were to just take the standard deduction, you don't have to worry about interest on your home loan. You have to worry about charitable giving. There's all these other itemized deductions that you could be doing. But if you take the standard deduction, it just covers all of it. Mm-hmm. And if you're at a point, and each year, most accountants will look at each one. Mm-hmm. So better to take the standard deduction, better to take the itemized deduction.
Right. Which number's higher? And which one's more beneficial?
That's right. And the idea of bunching is if you can take your charitable giving as well as some of your other items and bunch them into one year, maybe in that year, it's better to take itemized deduction. So then you do better on your taxes. However, in the next year, because you took so many in that first year, you're better to take the standard deduction. Mm-hmm. And so rather than, you know, splitting the two back and forth, they put all your deductions in one year. So 2 years of giving into 1 year, perhaps.
Into 1 year.
The hard part of this is you have to have the cash flow. You have to have the funds available to actually make the donations. But you kind of had some numbers to walk through of what this really looks like for someone.
Yeah, for those listening, and I hope this doesn't get too nuanced, but the idea being that if you have a household married filing jointly that plans to give $15,000 of charitable contribution in a year, and they, rather than do that year to year, decide to do bunched giving, they're going to donate $30,000 in 1 year. And so that is going to be over their standard deduction, which we talked about earlier being $24,000. So that automatically puts them in the camp of itemized deductions for that year. They take the full $30,000 deduction for the charitable donation. And then in the second year, they don't give charitably. So the $15,000 that they were planned to give, they've already given. So they default to the standard deduction of $24,000. So that means combined, they were able over 2 years to take the $30,000 and the $24,000. This is a very simple example. Mm-hmm. So that's $54,000 combined. Now, if they had done it the alternative way and just given $15,000 in year one and $15,000 in year two, they wouldn't have defaulted to itemized deductions. They would have defaulted to taking the standard deduction. And so in that case scenario, it means they would have only been allowed up to $24,000 of deduction per year or $48,000 for both years. So the difference being the $54,000 for 2 years in terms of deduction versus the $48,000. So hopefully that wasn't too nuanced, but that's essentially how it plays out. So you really see the benefit over the 2 years. But like you noted, cash flow is really important. If you have that available to you, it can be an advantage.
Yep. And a great thing to run by your CPA or your enrolled agent, whoever does your taxes for you, to let them know you're thinking about this and what that might look like for your specific tax situation. There's people who are, in a little bit lower tax bracket that this is not helpful for. There's people who are in a higher tax bracket this is also not helpful for. So it's really somewhere, there's a kind of a sweet spot where this type of strategy is useful.
Might work for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have another strategy that we want to talk about. This is one that I really enjoy talking about in terms of legacy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called the donor-advised fund.
Yeah. If you haven't heard of a donor-advised fund, I'd say make a point to Google this and just look it up a little bit. These are so useful. And I think when we talk to clients about them, a lot of folks, they've never heard of these before. It's so useful. People are starting to understand what these do. So a donor advised fund is a fund that you as the donor would create, and you get to be the advisor, meaning that you have put money into it and made a charitable contribution by transferring it over. You no longer can take it back. You no longer can use it for other things.
You can't change your mind. You are denoting these funds for charitable purposes.
That's right. But then the custodian who holds it, they look to you as the advisor to advise where, as far as charities, where it should be directed to. And the nice part about a donor advised fund is you could put, say, $10,000 into a fund, and then that same month, you could have that $10,000 go to a specific charity, easy enough. What you also could do is you could put $10,000 into the donor advised fund, and you could let it sit there for 6 months, for eight months, for 2 years, whatever time is appropriate, until you either identify the charity that you want, or you decide to kind of relinquish those funds and let them be released. And the benefit of these, I find, is especially when someone is like a business owner who has either had a windfall year, or they have sold their business, or you know, any sort of, even a high earner just has a really good year. And rather than saying, I got to find some charities, I got to get some money out, they simply move the money into their donor advised fund. They let it sit there. It stays invested. It keeps growing. But then they wait till they're at a charity dinner. Right. Or until they've done that specific planned out giving they want to do for the year. And then they utilize the funds. It kind of decouples
the timing and the actual gift.
Yeah, the tax idea and then actually giving. It's a great strategy.
And these funds can last for, I think you referenced, you know, any period of time. But just to be clear, multiple years. And the funds can be invested. So you can see some growth within the account. So in that case scenario, if you have a business owner that sells his business for, let's say, $5 million, and he denotes 10% of that to go for charitable purposes, he can go ahead and put that in a donor advised fund in the year he sells the business, take the charitable deduction on his taxes in that same year without actually distributing the funds to charity until a later date, whenever he decides.
Yep. We have a number
or
of
she.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We had a number of folks who would just like you said, take 10 years worth of giving, bring it all into that current year, give it, and then over the next 10 years, they just give a portion of that account. And it stretches out what they would have given anyways into 1 year. And in your example, if they sold it for $5 million, they want to put 10% into the donor advised fund, that's $500,000 can go into the fund that year. And you get that full, if that was your income, you would get that full $500,000 write off, which is more beneficial than trying to put little bits each year.
Now, what happens if the people who have established the donor advised fund, they have invested enough in it that it may outlast them? Yeah. What are some options
A beautiful aspect is that you can assign a successor advisor to that fund. And we talk with our clients a fair amount about this, of leaving a legacy to your children, to say your children could walk into now being the advisors of a fund that they can't themselves use. They can't take the money. They can't use it themselves, but they're now responsible as a steward to make sure that money gets to charities that you or they feel are doing great work. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of leaving a legacy to your kids to allow them to enter into being philanthropic and enter them into being charitably minded. I think it's a great structure going forward. The other two pieces I always like to mention, there's some people use these for a little bit of anonymity, that they'll use the donor advised fund because they don't want their name on the gift. And if that was your intention, you have to be a little mindful of how you set things up. But you can set them up to where the gift comes from the donor advised fund and not yourself. That's useful. The other aspect, people say, hey, this kind of sounds like a foundation, and it very much does. The difference being a foundation structure under the IRS has lots of rules with it. One of them is you have reporting requirements every year, and you have to give away 5% of whatever's in a foundation every year. And the donor advised fund doesn't have those rules right now. Congress has been looking at changing that. They've been looking at putting some rules on it. And the last study that I saw was that a foundation is required to give 5%. And so the average giving is 5%. People default to what the rule is. The donor advised funds have no requirement for giving each year. And the average gifting is actually 20%. So it's not that these donor advised funds are being used to hoard accounts and set them aside. These donor advised funds are actually being used to accumulate and distribute. My concern is that if they put the rules on the donor advised fund that says you have to give 5%, is that people would then start defaulting to 5%. And I think that would be unfortunate for people as well as for charities or what they're receiving.
Are there typically minimums to hold within the DAF or the donor advised fund?
Yeah, it depends where you go. We have a custodian that we use that wants to have, I think they want to have 45,000 as a minimum. Fidelity lets you open it with zero. So if you go online and look up Fidelity as a website, they can open it with zero. We also work through Charles Schwab, our other custodian, and they don't have any minimums. Mm-hmm. You can just start it with what it is.
So there are options available if they have lower, under than 40,000.
Yeah, there's some minimal fees, administration fees that go with it. But any amount really can be used just to get these going. And especially when someone's a high income earner, or they have a windfall, or a business owner, in my mind, that's what jumps to mind, that setting one of these up and having it year over year is so useful that when you get to your tax planning, meet with your accountant, and then they say, oh, if you gave $40,000 this year, it'd be great for your taxes, with a great benefit. Rather than having to rush and find a charity, you already know, I'll just move that over into the donor advised fund. Mm-hmm. And then that money is now earmarked and it's ready for you to use at a future date.
So from an estate planning perspective, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but Would a donor advised fund be something that you include in a trust?
It's a great question.
It's separate because it's outside of the estate.
Yeah, it's outside of the estate. Mm-hmm. It's a completed gift. You've given it. You've irrevocably given it for charitable purposes. The IRS considers it given. The custodian who you is holding your donor advised fund is the actual one holding the account now. And those funds are advised by you. So the point being, if you said, hey, I want to give these to my cousin Bill. Mm-hmm. We don't really have a cousin Bill, but if you gave him one and say, I want to give these away to someone else that was not a charity, the donor advised fund custodian would say no. Like they have to be a little bit of a gatekeeper to make sure what you're giving it to is a actual charity, a religious organization, a 501c3, mm-hmm. Different qualifying entities.
When you were to set it up, or the person who were to set it up, can they put any stipulations like a will would do on how the funds are donated? So let's say they're passionate about heart health care and they mm-hmm. only want the funds to be given to research regarding, you know, medical situations or yeah. regarding heart or cardiac. So are there any stipulations that can be set up?
That's a great question. Yeah.
Advice fund for future generations.
Yeah. I would think if someone's interested in that, I would be really interested in working through that. The custodian themselves, my understanding is that they don't have that built into their mm-hmm. systems to say this can only be given for certain things. However, when we set up your donor advised fund, if you name a successor advisor, it'd be interesting not just naming one individual person, but perhaps setting up a board, perhaps mm-hmm. setting up a group of people with some requirements similar to a foundation. The benefit of a foundation, what you're leaning towards, is it can be very specific and you can have all mm-hmm. sorts of rules and guidelines of how this money is to be used. With a donor advised fund, they're generally not set up to have those types of rules with them. But I don't see that there wouldn't be ways to kind of build that in so that mm-hmm. as you passed away, the next generation coming in, that they would have a guiding light on how to use these funds appropriately that the donor could be excited about. Well, yeah, but generally I see these as great open funds that you can set them aside and have them for the future.
Cool. Well, that just about wraps up our time. Do you have anything else on planned giving that you think our listeners
Yeah, I think it's just as a large view of this. Planned giving, I think, is so useful for people's, I don't call it their spirit, their soul, their psyche. Not just saying, I need more, but getting to the point of saying, I have enough for me.
Okay, I'm enough.
And how can I benefit others? I mean, if you can in your life just get to the point of saying, I have enough, that's probably success in mm-hmm. so many different levels. Not that the numbers have to be there, but your view of that, if you can consider what you had to be enough. And part of that is viewing, how can I utilize this to benefit those around me, whether it's your family, or whether it's the charities, they're doing such great work in your community. So mm-hmm. if anyone, I would encourage you all to think long and hard about your finances and whether you can do it now, you know, this year, it's only beginning of the year where we're at the moment, but mm-hmm. To do it intentionally, to plan for it, to say, I have a goal of giving a certain amount every year. I want to reach that. I want to get there someday. Mm-hmm. I think that's really valuable.
Yeah.
So these have been some good strategies. Hopefully they're useful to you.
If you have any questions though, or other topics that you'd like us to discuss on building wealthy habits, feel free to send us an email or contact us. This is a video podcast available on YouTube, Apple, Google, and of course on our website, tricordadvisors.com. So we've really enjoyed. Thank you so much for listening.
Until next week, folks, we grow in wisdom and knowledge. Thank you for listening.
Information and ideas discussed on this program are in the nature of general comment and cannot be relied upon as pertaining to your specific situation. Do not constitute legal or financial advice and do not create an attorney-client or fiduciary relationship. Any examples or circumstances discussed are fictional. Listeners should consult their own financial advisor, tax consultant, or attorney, as well as conduct their own due diligence prior to making any decisions. Investments involve risk and the possibility of loss, including the loss of principal. Also, situations are different and results may vary. Randy Barkley is a California Life Insurance Agent, California License Number 0518567, and Jeremiah Lee is a California licensed attorney and is responsible for this communication. Advisory services offered through Tricord Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm.